Hello and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We have a few announcements and then we will read the declaration, after which there will be two short talks on the aim and purpose of Theosophy, followed by comments, discussion, questions, comments. So we open, of course, on Sundays at 10:30. The doors open and the meeting begins at 11 promptly and ends at 12 promptly. We are in the month of October, and the overall topic for the month is Theosophy and the Theosophical Movement. And we did mention that today is, what is the aim and purpose of Theosophy? So on Wednesdays, the doors open at 5:15, and there's a library that's open until 7:15, and there's a librarian there to answer any questions you may have. Could you please be seated? Okay. We'll read the declaration now and we'll get the meeting started. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by studying otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So, what is the aim of Theosophy? We have a modern theosophical movement, but we also have the timeless one, the ancient one, that is comes forth periodically. But the word aim means to direct a course, to aspire, or to intend. Now, Theosophy literally means divine wisdom. The best definition of Theosophy comes from Funk and Wagnalls, and you can get that online, funkandwagnalls.com. So here's their definition. It is a system of mystical speculation applied to deduce a philosophy of the universe. In modern use, a system that claims to embrace the essential truth underlying all systems of religion, philosophy, and science. So we have the first object is of the philosophy is to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood without distinction of any kind. So brotherhood includes all sexes, causes, conditions, races, because spirit is sexless and is ever evolving. So Theosophy's aim is to reestablish the one universal religion, to reunite fragmentary sects and systems that have multiplied over the known course of history. And here's a quote from one of our founders, one of the teachers. Theosophy teaches the animal man to be a human man. When people have learned to think and feel as truly human beings should feel and think, they will act humanely, and works of charity, justice, and generosity will be done spontaneously by all. All right, so we want to ask ourselves, how can this be done? Could the usher, excuse me, thank you. Okay. So we're here to reunite the fragmentary sects and systems that have multiplied over the known course of history. Theosophy teaches, and then, of course, yes, we mentioned that. Okay. So how do we do this? Are we smarter than our pets or the animals in the jungle? Indeed, they act out of necessity and do not squander and spoil. Wouldn't it be better for our planet if we didn't exist? So we have been told that we are mere miserable sinners needing guidance and forgiveness from all extra cosmic, from an extra cosmic being in whose infinite wisdom, dark and mysterious, we must take on faith as it is revealed by his representatives on earth, the clergy. If we are pious and believe without questioning, we will be saved, so they say. And we will reap our personal reward in heaven for all eternity. Heathens, on the other hand, go to the other place, or eternal perdition. So Theosophy is sometimes derided as heresy and adherents as atheists and heathens or apostates. But let us look at the word heresy or heretic. Heretic comes from the Greek heretikos, which means able to choose. So although the name heretic may seem derogatory, those who are wielding or hurling that insult, actually it means able to choose rather than relying strictly on revelation, which is really hearsay. So Theosophy teaches growth through self-induced and self-devised methods and practices. In other words, one must be free to and able to choose, unfettered from priestly dogmas which shackle the will. So we learn by trial and error. We try, we fail, We try, fail, try, fail, and then succeed. It's a process. So another aim of theosophy is to teach a moral, unmaterialistic code of ethics. And this has been taught by all beings, by all great beings and teachers and saviors of the past, such as Buddha, Krishna, Lao Tzu, Jesus. And Buddha says, a quote attributed to Buddha is, "We are here to awaken from the illusion of separateness." So this feeling of being separate, whether it's a feeling of being better than or less than, they can both be detrimental and produce many delusions and generate misdeeds, both intentional or unintentional, whether through unthinking acts of indifference. Theosophy exhorts us to aim for the highest. We're told that we are perfectible, that we're not poor, miserable sinners as much as we are perfectible human beings. And we hit many pitfalls and stumbling blocks along the way, but the sweep and scope of evolution is vast and sometimes bewildering. But tools and help during our sojourn are at hand. So karma is always delivering what we need and when we need it. Reincarnation provides us with the instruments, life after life, to learn, grow, and evolve. So we'll close with two quotes that are in the Bible attributed to Jesus. These are both from, well, one's from Matthew. The first one's from Matthew. It's, "Be therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. And know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth within you." So we need to think and do, act and become.
So the second talk that we're going to do, the first one, of course, was the aim of theosophy. And this will be, this talk will be looking at the purpose of it. So purpose, then, the aim is like your targeted goal that we just heard about, whereas the purpose is the reason for action. And one of the things that we can look at to make it a little more understandable, because sometimes the two words are used interchangeably, although they are different. We theosophically looking at the idea of purpose, it's almost as if we can think of the idea of desire. Behind will stands desire. So the desire, then, for the reason of these aims that we're looking at. So purpose being the reason for the action, we can look at it as being desire. So we wanted to put this in very practical terms, because when we're looking at this idea of the aim and purpose of theosophy, it can be very daunting, and because theosophy is very deep, like in the ocean of theosophy, we talk about it. So we were thinking of taking a closer look at the declaration, because the declaration can be seen as the purpose for theosophy. And we'll go over some of the ideas in the declaration shortly. HPB said, when she, we think it might have been right before she passed, was, "Be theosophists, work for theosophy." So this can be looked at too as being the purpose of theosophy is so that we know how to be theosophists and we know how to work, that we have this desire in mind of what theosophy is, which we just heard about. And the main idea we think behind the declaration is, and there was a quote by Mr. Crosby, he says, the way to unite is to unite. Nothing prevents if that is the desire. Again, we're looking at this idea of desire, which in terms of this class today, that is the purpose, is to unite. And we did just want to mention in regards to the declaration that the declaration was written, was the declaration is a compilation that Mr. Crosby put together of Mr. Judge's statements, and this was done in 1909 when ULT was formed. So when we're looking at a practical method of living, what does that mean? And a practical method of living, whatever it is that we're focusing on, has to be something that means that is important to us. Because if it's not important to us, we're not going to adhere to any of these purposes. It has to have meaning for us. So the declaration then can be looked at for theosophy, for a theosophist, as an example of a way of living. To living in the spirit of the declaration is to move as soul, to set in motion ideas pertaining to the soul. So when we're looking at this idea of a way of living through the declaration, one thing we have to remember too is that having an opinion about something isn't necessarily the truth. So the declaration is a guide. The declaration is a way that we can be not told, but it can be suggested to us how to live. The first paragraph talks about the policy of the lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy and stressing the idea of no attachment to anything. It says, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. So it is very simple, this first paragraph. It is telling us about how important it is to focus on theosophy, that dissensions or differences of individual opinion can throw us off the track of concentrating on these ideas. And one difference of many between theosophy and an organized religion is that theosophy focuses on self-responsibility and loyalty to the founders. So we don't want to be distracted by differences of individual opinion, because opinion is not necessarily the truth. So the work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. Another reason why not taking part in side issues is that ULT focuses strictly on the teachings, so we don't want to bring any politics or anything, any other religious ideas into the mix, because, well, we have so much information to study now that, and it's the original teachings from eons back, and we want to keep those pure. And the work in that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy through a truer realization of the self. So again, we're looking at this idea of self-responsibility and the fundamental principles of theosophy. And it sounds very simple, but it is very complicated at the same time, that we do have these ideas, that we have these principles in print, that we are able to understand and keep studying about them. And then the last one is a very important part. It says a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. This is the hallmark of theosophy, is that what we do, what we study, the progress that we're going to be making, all has to do of our motive of helping others. And then this basis for union, which is the purpose, which is the desire, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And because of this, we don't have any leaders, we don't have a constitution, we have no officers, because it's the personality that will get in the way. This way we are all together as one. So we're looking at the furtherance of unity because it regards us theosophists, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And this is the who when it comes into this idea of a way of living. Who wants to live like this? Who wants to have the motive of without distinction of any person? And with these declared purposes, these declared desires, it is those who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. So this is what we're looking for. This is the desire that we have. This is the purpose that we have, is to help and teach others, and the furtherance of unity and a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. So these are the purposes then, and they are spelled out in the Declaration. It is a way of living that we can all aspire to. So we'll just end the section with a quote. Since universal brotherhood is the keynote of theosophy, all those working spiritually to that end, whatever their professed creed, must necessarily be theosophists at heart. No other barriers, race, caste, creed, sex, condition, or organization can have any valid significance. Differences of capacity there must be. Such are the results of karma and reincarnation, but each associate can give the best he has to give, and more cannot be asked of anyone.
Just want to take questions.
Yeah, so we'll take questions. Yes.
In the first presentation, there was a definition offered from the dictionary, and seems that we recall that some of the initial statements were that it is a system of mystical speculation, and which is an interesting perspective from the dictionary point of view, but it's our understanding that it's not the speculation or the opinion of any one group or individual, but rather it is knowledge. So how can that statement be made, that it is knowledge? What's the foundation for that?
Well,
opposed to speculation.
Yeah, our understanding is that this definition came directly from William Q. Judge, that he wrote the definition in the Funk and Wagnalls dictionary. And if it was listed as this is mystical fact, and you know, it's couched in language to where one needs to test, check, and verify for one's own. So mystical speculation, well, we feel like, well, we need to speculate before we can, and it needs to percolate in a sense through our system until we make it ours, until it's our knowledge. It's otherwise it sounds dogmatic if we don't. Yes, go ahead.
So that leads to the thought, if whether it's a speculation or a body of knowledge, it seems that knowledge in itself can't, it's just information in itself, it can't have any aim or purpose, but there can be an aim and purpose for which we're trying to learn it. For which we're trying to learn it.
For which we're trying
or
to learn.
Why would an individual, what would be the aim of an individual trying to learn about theosophy or speculate?
Well, because it's knowledge that embraces the essential truth, as to get the last part of the definition. It says it claims to embrace the essential truth underlying all systems of religion, philosophy, and science. So that is a claim which we must prove, again, to ourselves. It's something that, theosophy is, the aim is very, it's all encompassing, because we think that everything is religious, philosophical, or scientific, that's kind of embodies all knowledge there, those three main branches of knowledge. So it's all embracing. The claim is that it's all embracing, but the challenge is, can we poke holes in it? And we may feel like we've poked a hole in it, but then that'll just open up another question and another question, and it's a long process of becoming. It's a process of becoming.
And let's go ahead. The part of the question was, why would a person want to come and learn the aim and purpose of theosophy? Well, a couple things is that we understand that a lot of people that come here, they come because at some point in the past they have been exposed to these ideas, and plus they have not gotten anything from their own religion that they were brought up in. So everybody who comes here that we have spoken to have been searching for quite a while for something that is felt inside, that they have not been given the freedom in other religions. And there is that mystical idea of something coming from inward, outward, that we are soul, not that we're given soul because of doing something good, and that it can be taken away if we do something bad. So theosophy offers the freedom, but there is a catch on that, because the freedom has to be to learn not for oneself. This knowledge is important, but it has to be put in the perspective of doing it and learning it and putting into practice for others. In the back?
Thank you. Well, so basically it comes back to the reason that you would study theosophy. Why are we here learning? Why are we? Well, we think from our heart values, we want to promote harmony. We want to promote some kind of inclusiveness rather than exclusiveness. Right now we want, we want to understand so that we can help. And it's not for ourselves. but we know that by helping ourselves, we help others. So, theosophy, part of the education that we are looking for is to develop, I guess, a different point of view and see things from more of a universal basis and to particulars and back to universals again. You know, that we begin looking and thinking about life in a different way. And certainly, these ideas are not found in the mainstream. You have to search them out.
Yeah, they're hidden in a sense. There's fragments here and there, but theosophy is universal and all encompassing, really. There was a hand in the back earlier.
We were wondering about that statement, self-induced and self-devised efforts. And especially in today's world, where there's so many sidetracks that individuals can get caught up in, that's a very strong statement, and it takes a lot of weight out of the individual to stick to that idea of, I have to do it myself. I have to put out that energy to try to understand so that that internal part of me will eventually bloom.
Yes, the idea of self-induced and self-devised methods is, if we would really look at that, that is extremely powerful, because so many people want to be spoon-fed. They want to be told what to believe, whereas these ideas have to be studied and taken in. These ideas are inherent in us, but we have to, as was said in the comment, we have to get rid of all the distractions so that we can focus on these ideas. And it is such a quick society anymore. Everything is, you know, fast food. When we were growing up, we would come home and it's like, is there a message on the machine? You know, and even before the machine, we had to sit and wait for a phone call that we were expecting. So life has gotten so much quicker and so much more immediate that in order to sit and be quiet and meditate and study, these are the ways that we're going to open up our heart, open up our brain for these ideas to trickle down from our higher self. But we have to get rid of the distractions.
It's a hand in the corner there.
We have always been amazed at the language used by the elders, the old folks at home, no matter how much we were exposed to modern education. And when we come in, we listen here, and we hear such terms as independent. We always think of our grandparents and arguing or talking about something. Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, I get it. I don't think so. These are common terms that some are acquainted with. And then when we come into these rooms and we hear the Declaration, independence, the policy of this lodge, and then we begin with the three fundamental propositions, we're given ideas here in these rooms to think about. No one's preaching. Now I get it. And when we read about the Declaration of Independence and so forth, the wording and so forth, we each are responsible for maintaining a unity, brotherhood, and compassion, and working for the better charity. All of these point right back to how you think, and you're free to think that way and apply it. The opposite, we see fighting, disagreements, all kinds of crimes. That's because they lack independent devotion to the truth involved and how we work together for the good of all. Read the Declaration of Independence.
Working for the good of all is, we think is a very important, I mean, that's a motive, working for the good of all, that's universal brotherhood. And by knowing that each and every person is a ray of the divine, that we are all on our own karmic path, and we're working at different speeds. We remember years ago, when we were still working, that there was a couple people would sit at lunch and just continue to criticize everybody about different things, different ways they act, they spoke, dressed, whatever it was. And in the before Theosophy, we might have joined in on that criticism. But then we learned that no, everybody is on their own path. Everybody has their own karma that they're living with. We don't know what's going on in somebody else's home. So the kindness and compassion that one learns in Theosophy is something that can be brought out to the outside, but it's something that we have to learn independently.
Yes, we're here to learn to be independent thinkers. And we have to remember, too, that Theosophy is for those who want it. So there are many who don't want it. It's we're here to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood. There are many brotherhoods, but they're not universal. In the back there?
We've always thought that coming to Theosophy always presents before the mind the ideal. Even with the Mahatmas, we're always being presented with something higher and more significant. And so all of a sudden the mind becomes aware of these ideas and these, you know, of life all around us in every way, shape, or form. So, you know, to have an ideal, it has something for us to strive toward, even though, now, I'll never be a Mahatma in this life, but it's in my head that that is a possibility in perhaps some other life. But, you know, the entanglements of this life, you know, we're far from that goal.
We're far from the goal, but we're working toward it, and we're only responsible for the effort. That's all, not the outcome. We were thinking about something we read many years ago, that small minds talk about other people, average minds talk about events, but great minds talk about ideas and ideals. Mm-hmm. Did you want to say anything?
I forget.
There's been a hand here. Yes.
So it was mentioned from the platform what Mr. Judge says, that Theosophy teaches that we don't have souls, we are souls.
Right.
And
right.
We also remember that idea, the soul knows what it needs. How can the soul need anything? If it's immortal and divine in nature, what does it mean that the soul needs something and knows and tries to seek it out?
Do you want to go?
Well, we think there are different, we know that there's the spiritual soul, there's the the animal soul.
Human soul.
And the human soul. Well, that's the same. So we have to look at which soul are we talking about. And we know that since mind is dual, and we have to look at the idea of pulling up the lower mind, that it is the connection, lower mind and kama are the connections between the spiritual soul and material and the material world. So these inherent ideas that are in us, we understand that as we progress along, that more of these diversions will be removed. So the soul knows that it needs this connection with life, with physical life, so that these lessons can be learned, so that one can bring up the lower mind into a more spiritual life. Yes.
So, does that mean that there's an aspect of our soul that knows that it needs these ideas, almost like spiritual ideas are food, it nourishes it, because of it, it's dual, it's incarnated, there's a part of us that still recognizes that the physical isn't everything, there's something else we need, and it searches it out.
Well, it's an interesting phrasing, the soul knows what it, and that is, so when we think of the idea of the soul knows, and we certainly will welcome input from the other half of the chair as well, that the term know, we don't think that it's being used in the exactly the same manner that when we think, oh, I know who this person is, I know how to spell dog, that kind of thing. We think that knowing is a more spiritual knowing, not a hard, fast, concrete way of knowing, well, you know, this person needs to learn more about compassion, kind of a thing, that it's a knowing, like that inherent knowledge that we have.
So soul is one, but there are aspects of soul. And buddhi, the highest soul, or spiritual intellection, or intuition, knows. It knows. It's on a plane, and we're trying to reach up to that plane. So it depends on whether we're acting fully human, as the quote that was read earlier, or we're acting through our senses and our desires and our sense of separateness and what do I need, and providing materially for ourselves, which we need to do, but it's not, shouldn't be our only, shouldn't be our only goal, although, you know, it can be with some. So the quote was from HBB, and it's, you know, for the animal man to become a fully human man, to reach up and become fully human. And that's not perfect yet, but it's an important step to be human. In the back?
What do we mean by emancipation? Emancipation.
Well, to be free, to free oneself.
So it just wasn't emancipation for the slaves. It was emancipation for the entire country.
Well, slavery is the original sin of, you know, and it took, it's still, well, it's a hot button issue, of course, but it's, the slaves were freed physically, you know, but they were still, and even, the, well, yes.
Well, let's think about it. In other words, independent devotion requires contemplation, concentration on certain ideas and their true meaning, and meditation. We think it means living the life, and that's poetry in a way, when we discover who am I, what am I, and that freedom fibers are the ones who fight for independence.
And the idea of independent devotion, and the idea of emancipation is that even if somebody is in jail, is living in a country where they're not allowed to practice these ideas or any kind of religious idea that doesn't go along with the governmental one, that you still have your brain, you still have your mind, you can still think about these ideas. As was said, one can meditate. So we can still think, these ideas are in there, and it can be, you know, independent devotion can be carried out if there's no way to express it.
So in order to be a fully free society, you know, we need to move beyond the mental slavery to ideas and dogmas. And that's, yes, do you follow up?
And the universal brotherhood is a fact in nature.
It's already a fact.
I never thought about that.
It's already a fact. It's just the realization of the fact. That's the key.
And here we give you ideas to think about. Independent. No pressure. And then one is willing perhaps to take responsibility for his own conduct. And then we hear certain words from the Bible. And we wonder why they don't practice what they preach. Here, we give you the ideas to think about independently.
Do you want to jump in there?
No.
Yes.
Well, the comment is that, you know, we live in a world where everyone is living outside of themselves. There are gods outside themselves. The material world, everything is outside of themselves. And we're, a theosophy is saying, no, look within, where thou art the Lord. And, you know, and this inherent knowledge, do we truly believe that we have inherent knowledge? If we truly believed, it would be come forth. You know, so, you know, it's, we are so much larger than we can, we have ever possibly imagined. You know, our mind sets us free, but our heart cannot be entangled in matter.
Well, the interesting thing is that we all have to remember that we're in Kali Yuga, that this is the dark age, it's a very material age, and by knowing that this is something that eventually will end, but that we can make great strides during this time. So if we're aware, and as was said, you know, if it's inherent, why doesn't it come out? Why doesn't it come forth? It's because of all the distractions. It's because of where we are in our own individual evolution as to why it isn't coming out. But knowing that we have to work harder, but by working harder, we're going to be making bigger gains on our own individual path.
But it shouldn't be just concerned about our progress or we're here to look for all of nature, really. Everything is connected. All of universal brotherhood includes all the kingdoms seen and unseen, because it's all soul, but it's in various gradations, as it were, of soul, eventually moving through the human stage and beyond. But we're here for our evolution, but we're also to raise up all of life consciously if we can. And again, theosophy is not, at this stage, it's not for everyone, it's just for those who really want it. There is a lot of selfishness in the world, but that's their path. And in Kali Yuga, there's a confusion of castes. There's a natural caste system which exists everywhere, and when it's functioning, it's like a machine. It functions very beautifully. But now in Kali Yuga, things are upside down or topsy-turvy. But those who would normally be of low caste, who are in high positions and making decisions, if they, in a sense, pass their test, if they learn the lessons and rise to the occasion, then they keep that high estate, that they earn it, then they get to keep it. Whereas others that are suffering have to learn lessons. What comes with this suffering? Why is it? A lot of suffering is voluntary too. There's real suffering in the world, but a lot of it is voluntary. Yes.
It's an interesting dilemma when it's mentioned that theosophy is for those who want it, which is true, and it's not for everyone, but it is. In a sense, it's our birthright, and we acknowledge that there are certain problems humanity shares: materialism, superstition, prejudice, slavery to dogmatism. We all feel it to some degree, or at least know people.
We are. Yeah.
So theosophy is here for that, and yet that's why we have it, but yet not everybody, as you said, is ready to do something.
Well, we think karma has a lot to play in whether somebody will be ready for these ideas, because karmically they could be blocked, a karmic block that for whatever reason they're looking in other areas and not, you know, maybe they feel restless but they don't know why. And they're so hooked on, you know, whether they're going to go to hell or not, that they may be afraid at this point in time. So karmically, we think those that aren't looking, even though these ideas are inherent, they may feel restless, or they just may be very happy with what they have. And karmically, they're just not ready to be looking for it yet.
You mentioned the term karma, which means law. And we know fire burns and wood rents. But here it seems that we're getting ideas of a better nature to improve our sense of response ability. And with an improved sense of responsibility, then we can point out that way to anyone who wishes to listen and begin to participate actively in the evolution of ideas, our sense of responsibility.
And we could also say that responsibility is the ability to respond. and to respond appropriately, hopefully.
So we still have a few minutes. Yes.
So theosophy is a philosophy of life, but it points the way of how to live that life. We read the Gita together every summer, and it's a clear path to understanding your full responsibility. So again, theosophy is always pointing out the ideal so that the mind has something to grasp. Otherwise, we just sort of go from one idea to another.
And the declaration certainly goes along with that last comment. And we've been talking a lot this morning about independent devotion. And so this is one of the main things between independent devotion and universal brotherhood. And the whole idea is to help pull up the lower kingdoms, to help those that are in need, and to spread, broadcast these ideas. But as we said a couple minutes ago, not everybody is ready yet to hear them. Yes.
But aren't we all doing that now? That we're affecting all of life around us. We do. That's what we are. And, we're trying to be better able to help and teach others. But we're doing that now, for better or for worse. And we are raising the lower kingdoms up because we're consuming it. Consuming all the other kingdoms in this life. So, if you look at it, the more you look at it, the more responsibility that you sort of comprehend, because that's how all these lower kingdoms become responsible for, because we use them. We use them physically and astrally, and all these things we interact with.
And we talk about the idea that thoughts have power, thoughts are actually material to a degree. And interesting about using the lower kingdoms, we've talked about how even when we're preparing a meal, that the impressions, our thoughts, can actually be impressed on what we're making. That if we're angry and upset, that those sensations can be impressed onto the food. Yes, it's that time now.
You don't have a meeting or anything?
I do. We did want to just repeat as a closing, because we think it's extremely powerful, from the ending that we used earlier. It says, but each associate can give the best he has to give, and more cannot be asked of anyone. Our meeting is over.